The word why, what a curious word. The kind of word that can make us cringe, feel defensive, or even distant. But you know, sometimes why is the key. The key that can unlock so much to our lives. Join me as we explore the why with fascinating contributors to the world, those that entertain us, inform us, teach us about life, and if we're lucky, inspire the next in all of us. I'm your host, Dr. Rod Berger, and welcome to Headroom, a production of Rainlight and co-produced by Old Soul. Let's go.
Let me take you inside my world just for a second. I get pitched, I get emails from publicists and PR professionals and even people out there that are innovating themselves and they want to be interviewed or they want to have a conversation about their story. It's incredibly humbling and sometimes it's a bit taxing because I don't know what's there when I get a given email or a phone call comes in. But you know what? I'm always interested. I'm always curious. And you know, often I'm disappointed or I don't think maybe it's right for me. But recently I've been getting more and more inbound email and correspondence from publicists and authors. And not just authors that are writing about maybe mundane sort of everyday things, but really consequential and substantive topics relative to survival, history, family, you know, multicultural. It's incredible. And I feel terribly honored that somehow my inbox is the recipient of these pitches. And today is one that I'm so glad I opened because I think it's so powerful. And I will admit I'm a history buff. I just am. I think the stories that come from the wake of history are the most powerful. And yes, I am curious about what the future holds and the horizon before us. But man, history is so powerful. And there's so many stories that we either don't know or we should know that will make our lives, I think, more, not maybe complete, but create a deeper and more comprehensive sense of who we are and what our capabilities are. This is a wonderful story. There are elements of sadness, of revelation, of trust and breaking of trust and family secrets, but all in the vein of protection and survival and in wanting a continuation, a spirit, a family. We're going to be spending time today with Linda Ambrose Brenneman. She's the author and I would say the family representative of the book, The Pulitzer Saga, an incredible tale where if not for a house fire and a box that survived, I don't know if we'd be having this conversation. And I don't know if this powerful book would actually be a book other than a random set of ideas, maybe bouncing around the family in different representatives of the family and not coalescing into what I think is a very powerful read. I hope you find it to be as powerful as I did. Enjoy. You know, sometimes there are winds of change. There are times in our lives when things are presented in front of us and we're not exactly sure why. And this feels like a point in time for me. You know, I've been telling the universe just how much I love story, obviously, and those that follow have noted that. And I'm getting the opportunity to dive into stories that go beyond sort of the surface level of our lives and into what it means to be human, to be connected, and to understand who we are and where we come from. I am so looking forward to this conversation. The book is entitled The Pulitzer Saga. This is just an incredible, and saga is so well and aptly used in the title. But we're spending time with Linda Ambrose Brenneman. This amazing story. So I'm just going to read this straight from your publicist, because I don't know if I could put it in a better way as sort of a preamble here, Linda. Imagine living your life as a Catholic and then learning Hungarian immigrant parents who became prominent physicians in Buffalo, New York, were harboring a secret of 8 generations of Jewish ancestors in Budapest on your father's side, and him taking that secret to the grave. I won't go in any further in that backdrop, but you know, it's sort of that, you know, you had me at hello adage. You know, we go back, there's a house fire, there's a box that survives, and then there's also, so you've got that element in it, which sounds very Hollywood, right? Or it sounds like a documentary that you've got to watch, whether you're on a plane or you're at home or you're on vacation. And then you dive a little bit deeper into the saga and you see that there were pieces that you were aware of, but a long period of time passed before you were able to sort of dive in and understand, or at least explore it like a detective. So why don't we start there, Linda? Because there are a million places that we could start. And we'll talk, you know, about specifics in the book. By the way, I do highly recommend this book. I was just sharing off air with Linda that it's so visual. It feels like it takes you there. And, you know, Linda, that, and I want to talk about this as well, just the sense of responsibility that these people that are no longer with us, they still come to life in the way in which they are portrayed and documented and woven into the story. And I think that, one, that's a talent that you express, but it's so powerful. And the visual aids really, I think, help to bring people along, including my 11-year-old who was wanting to dig through the book. So I thank you as a dad.
That's wonderful.
So take me back, and I'll let you pick, but you know, what was your general knowledge of where your family came from? And talk about the moment when that subtly was altered.
Well, as you said, well, first of all, Rod, thank you for having me on this show. It's really a pleasure to be able to talk with you. I'm going to go back. You know, we were, as you said, I grew up in Buffalo, New York. My parents were, I thought, Hungarian Catholics who had escaped World War II. And we knew they came here to start a better life. They were physicians. I was the middle child of seven, so right in the middle. And we had a very privileged, a very wonderful childhood. I thought everything was fine. We're little cracks, little secrets that I think when you grow up, you feel. But I wasn't paying attention to that growing up. And then when I was 27, I was actually away in graduate school. And I came home for vacation. And I'll never forget the scene. I was in my room unpacking. And my brother said to me, "I have a secret to tell you." Well, it turned out what happened is my older sister had gone to a meeting in Montreal and stayed with her godmother and just simply asked what she thought was a very innocent question. What was my great-grandmother Margit like? And the answer came back, well, like all Jewish women, she ruled the roost. So my sister sort of did a double take. What do you mean, Jewish? So that's how we found out. And when my brother told me in this, you know, very secretive voice, I thought, okay, I actually just accepted it as normal and didn't really think about it. And I was 27, I was in business school, I was worried about my career, what I was going to do. So while I was curious, and I went right back to my mother and I said, "Is this true?" And she did say yes. But I asked a few questions throughout, but certainly not enough. And a couple of times there were in 1984 and in 1990, I went to Budapest with my parents. The second time in 1990, that was after I had found out. And I got to spend a lot of time with my mother and asked her questions, but she answered some of them, and I thought she answered them truthfully, but I found out later they were half-truths. There was a lot she was leaving out. And one of the things she had sort of said very, in a very humble and shy way, she sort of said to me, "Well, during the war, I hit a few people." So I'll talk about that later because, you know, in the way she said it, I thought, oh, okay, that was it. And I really didn't know enough history to be able to ask more questions. So fast forward 2006, my mother was awarded Righteous Among Nations. And if your listeners don't know what that is the highest award that the Israeli government gives non-Jews for hiding Jews during the Holocaust. And there's only about 20,000 people in the world who were awarded that. And of course, the most famous is Oskar Schindler, who most people know about. But at any rate, so I started to learn a little, you know, a few things here and there. And then in 2011, just as you said, my parents' house caught fire. And in the, you know, trying to get in the chaos and trying to get everything out so it wouldn't, you know, things that were hadn't been burned, but my sister didn't want them damaged by the water and fire trucks. She just took out a lot of paintings and whatever she could take out, and didn't even realize that one of those things was a box. And somehow that box got put in the back of a closet and ignored. And then in 2016, I really think there's some miracles going on here, but in the fact that the box was saved. And then in 2016, I decided, okay, I'm going to start to look into my family history. And really, I really wanted to learn more about Margit. And the only thing I knew to start was the name Adam Pulitzer. Because when my brother was a medical student, he came home one day and he told my parents, I'm going to go into ear, nose, and throat. And my mother said, oh, you have a very famous relative, Adam Pulitzer, who is considered the father of ear, nose, and throat. So that's, I remembered his name, and that's the only thing I knew to start with. So I started Googling and, you know, doing whatever I could. And he is considered to this day the father of otology, and has lots of information on Wikipedia and articles and so on. But that still wasn't enough, because I couldn't figure out how we were really related, whether we were related. And then my sister happened to be cleaning out her closet and found this box and sent it to me, and opened the box. And there's a lot of letters, official documents, pictures, and so on. But of course, all the letters and the documents were in Hungarian, and Google Translate doesn't do
it. Did not work.
Very well. It just doesn't work. So I knew I needed to find somebody, and through a friend was connected with a woman here, Anna Beyer is her name, and she's just this remarkable, such an energetic person. And I took, you know, some of the folders from the box to her home. I thought I would be there for an hour or so, and if I didn't have it another commitment, I would have been there for days.
Yeah.
We started to dig into things, and she was astounded at what was there, and said, you really need to find someone to help you research it. And she introduced me to András Gazicki, who was the most
you dedicated
incredible.
The book to.
Yeah. Yeah. He was an amazing researcher. He was a lawyer and a sociologist, and became just such a trusted partner through this process that we went through. And we spent 7 years researching my family.
There's so much there. So 2016, you start to get, I don't know, sort of the itch to learn a little bit more. I can connect to that from a different angle. I've shared before in different episodes that I'm first generation. My father grew up in World War II in Germany. And there were those, I know what you mean when you say you hear something, and it's like, they're like little hints as you're growing up, but you don't know. It's like a clue or a game where, you know, a word is, you know, there's some reference and it just doesn't make any sense. It sort of comes out of left field, and you kind of brush it under the rug and you keep going. What was it about what was going on in 2016 that kind of cracked that door, the proverbial door for you to want to dig? Because a lot of people don't want to know, I think, right? They don't, if it's not sort of presented right in front of them, we all, especially now, we have so much going on that to think we have the time to dig into what is Pandora's box potentially Was there something that was going on for you at that point in time?
I think a couple things came together at the same time. I had been having that itch, especially after my mother, after 2006, and it just grew and grew and grew that I really wanted to learn what happened. And I think part of it, it was just this thing that welled up inside of me. I'm not sure I can really explain it or put words to it. But the other thing that happened at the same time was that I'd been an entrepreneur. I'd been with a company for, oh goodness, 10 or 12 years. And we had a very nice exit. So it allowed me the time and the space to be able to focus on this. And I just decided, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. And it was really, you know, and I wish I had done it so many years before, because, you know, most people had either died or they were so old, they didn't, you know, I couldn't get in touch with them. So goodness, I just, you know, I kick myself, because just as you say, there were hints before, and I wish I had the, not only the courage, but also the historical knowledge to be able to ask the questions, because I didn't even know what questions to ask. You know, when my mother said in 1990, I hit a few people. Okay, what did that really mean?
Yeah.
I didn't know. So I wish I had asked, but hindsight's 20/20. So
I want to start to dive into the book a little bit and pause and reflect on experiences for you personally, as a family member, as a researcher, and as a citizen, in potentially finding responsibility and sharing a story that ironically was hidden when you think about, right, hiding and out of protection. You know, one thing that you shared, here sort of in the open, is you talked about how, you know, this box, right, and the box had all this incredible information. That alone, for people who may not, you know, may not be a part of their own family lineage, is the fact that they even brought that amount of information, that documentation with them, is paramount. I mean, the factions of people that would have left all of that behind, right? I mean, that speaks to the essence of them, which I think is there a great sense of pride you have in something like, it sounds so small maybe, but boy, I think that's huge. The courage to take that with them as a part of, like, you don't want to leave your story behind.
Well, I think, you know, I think there's a couple things. I think when my parents first came, I don't think they could bring a lot. I mean, they when they left Hungary, they left just in time, and they actually went to Zurich first to finish their medical studies. But they were lucky to leave because it was just before the wall came down. And when that Iron Curtain came down, there wasn't much getting out of Hungary. Now, I want to talk about my grandmother for a minute. My grandmother left in 1956 right after the Hungarian Revolution. There was a window when they were allowing, I would say, really just the elderly. I might be a little off in that, but it was easier for the elderly to get out. So that's when my grandmother came. And she had left her family. I mean, her husband had died in the Holocaust. But her mother was still there, and her sister, who she was very, very close to. And so she always wanted to go back, but she only got to go back a couple times. And I think every time she went back, she brought. And so I think she brought a lot of those papers out, and she brought things with her. And my parents also, once they started to go back, they also started to bring things out. But as they did that, you know, up until 1990, when the communists still ruled, they risked their lives to even just smuggle out what was theirs.
It's so powerful. And the, yeah. I mean, it's just the persistence, you know, that we're going to take risks because it is important. It's incredibly important. You know, you start the book with a quote by the Nobel Peace Prize winner, Elie Wiesel, who, and I want to read the quote. I think it's really important. And I want to ask you afterwards, you know, the sort of the impetus to put this and what it means to sort of set the stage with this, because it felt like it set the stage for me as the reader. And I don't know if that was the intention, but I was thankful that you did do it. So the quote is, "To learn means to accept the postulate that life did not begin at my birth. Others have been here before me, and I walk in their footsteps. The books I have read were composed by generations of fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, teachers and disciples. I am the sum total of their experiences, their quests."
To me, yeah, it said it all. It was why I did this, right? Because we are the sum total of our ancestors. And so for me, researching this book and learning who I was, it gave me a sense of who I was. And I will say, before this book, and I'll go back to one of your first questions, why was it at this time that I decided to research? I think I needed to learn who I was. And I didn't know, when you don't have, you know, if you don't mind, so this tree is really important to me because I didn't have these roots. I was wobbly. Without the roots, I was wobbly. And in the tree, there, I don't know if you can see it well enough, but there's a very subtle the Star of David. And
yeah.
And so for me to find my ancestors, I felt like, okay, now I belong here. And I'm not sure I knew that I really belonged on this earth without these roots.
It's very powerful. And you know, you were showing, for those that are listening and not watching, you were showing the cover to the book, and there's a subtle power to the imagery of it, which I thought was very powerful. And I now feel terrible. I did not see the Star of David in the root system, but now that you've brought that to my attention, I see it. And I mean, really, really powerful. Linda, I wonder if we could sort of walk down the what ifs, mm-hmm. because I think the experience of what if is a great, it's like a, it's a fantastic example of the conflict that we experience as humans. We're not linear. We're very complex. It's messy. And I just wonder if you contemplate what if, like in essence, what if, you know, what if you knew about your father from, in essence, the word go? How might that have changed your relationship for the better, for the worse, for the undetermined? And what if the box didn't survive? I wonder if you ever contemplate those kinds of questions.
Well, let me start with the first one. What if I had known from the beginning? I think I would have had a very different relationship with my father, because I think growing up, you really do feel like there are secrets, even though they're not talked about. But with this, when you ask questions and there's this web of secrecy and you can't get beyond it, you think there's something wrong with you. At least that's how I was growing up. What was wrong with me that they couldn't tell me these things? And I think there was anger that was bubbling up there. I was angry with my father for not being able to tell me what was going on. And I think on his side, I think he never dealt with the trauma that he experienced. And by not dealing with it, he had an explosive temper, you know, and all of a sudden, I mean, it felt like as a kid, out of the blue, all of a sudden something would trigger him and you didn't know what it was and you'd get an explosion. And so, and that just sets up such an environment of just anger, being angry at him. And I think had we been able to talk through what he experienced and so on, I think there wouldn't have been that anger. So, yeah, so that's the first part.
What if the box had not been discovered?
It would have been a lot tougher. I think I still would have been on a search, even without the box, but we couldn't have found out the kinds of things we found out. For example, I didn't even know the names in my family. I had no idea that I was a Pulitzer. I was a descendant of a Pulitzer. I had no idea the name Misner. And Misner was my great-great-grandfather's name, who he himself was, you know, a very prominent lawyer. He was a founder of the Budapest Bar and a prominent lawyer. And the first thing András did was look up his name. And he said he found over 300 articles in his databases that my great-grandfather had written. So, you know, that the richness and the tapestry wouldn't have been there. On the other hand, I think I still would have found some things because I went back to some people who were living. And, you know, yeah, and I described this in the book. We got very lucky. András found, my father had a cousin whose last name was Viron, and we found nieces of his cousin, and they had saved a number of things, including a book, the book called Our Family History, written by Zygmunt Pulitzer, who took us back to the 1700s, which is why we could find all the way back.
Headroom is produced by Old Soul, a one-stop marketing agency that understands the power of brand and nuance. Reach out to my guy Matt at Old Soul and supercharge your brand and content strategy. That's Old Soul. Shoot Matt a note at aoldsoul.com. That's aoldsoul.com. And now, back to our guest.
Linda, tell me about I'd love to hear the experience, the emotional experience, the roller coaster, the personal side of it. Not maybe the side that you shared or communicated even through the research and maybe the excitement of uncovering different elements at different points in time. But I would think that there is sort of this almost rinse and repeat feeling potentially of grieving a history you did not know existed and the impact of that, the pride that might well up at a moment's notice when you're doing something benign in your daily life for the family that you didn't know, but that you can romanticize in your own mind and dreams sort of late at night, the anger that comes with secrets and just the nature of secrets. And then the sequence with which information has come out to be revealed to you. Can you speak to the unpredictability of human emotions in something so big as this?
Yeah, you know, when I started, I had no idea what we would find. But then working with András and just the kinds of things that he found, every time he would find something, I'd be so excited about it. It was, you know, that roller coaster up. Then I wouldn't hear from him because remember, he's in Hungary. I'm in, you know, Virginia. And if I didn't hear from him for a while and I couldn't get in touch with him, you know, that would be the roller coaster down. But, you know, the thing about András was he was at the same time, he was fighting colon cancer. And he died of it in 2021, but which was, you know, a huge blow, not only to the research, but just personally. We had become very close and you know, he was such father a figure like partner. I would say not so much a father figure, but a real trusted partner. And the one thing about him is he was going through this research. He would get really excited about some of the family connections and what he was finding, but he always had to verify. He was all about the truth. And he had to verify and make sure that, yes, this was this Zygmunt Pulitzer and not another, because there were others at the same time. And I describe in the book how, because of spellings, you know, they weren't that exact on a spelling. So Zygmunt Pulitzer could be spelled, you know, five different ways, and Pulitzer could be spelled five different ways. So he always had to make sure that he was focusing on the right person. So it was a real challenge, but when he found something, the excitement was just amazing. And then one of the things that I did, because my history was just not good enough, and I read so much history trying to understand the era and the periods that we were researching, and also other biographies, so I could understand sort of the zeitgeist of the times. And so it was a real partnership, because I would find something and then ask him about it. And he would say, okay, now read this book and this book and this book, and this will give you a better idea of what was going on. And there were, so we pushed each other. And then I would remember things, just as you said, those little hints that you learned about, but you couldn't place. And so then I would remember something and ask him about it and bring it up, and we would research. So it was a real partnership. But just as you said, going through that process, a lot of excitement, a lot of, when things didn't turn out, you know, disappointment, but you just keep going. You just keep going.
Almost picture you, it's like a film strip when someone is so vivid in talking, you're almost watching a movie sort of play out in real time. And that is more that Andras is revealing. It's almost as if it's another chapter in a book, or it's the next scene in a movie. And with the parallel research that you were doing and reading biographies and trying to understand sort of the context, it's as if you were putting together a puzzle, as if the picture was sort of coming to life.
Very much so. That's such an accurate description.
How do you think it's changed you in the way in which you understand your own constitution in the world today? How have you changed as a person in your relationships and the way in which you look at the world? You know, I would think that it would have some profound effects.
It did. On a number of different levels, on a very personal level, I think by learning that I had these ancestors, I think it's, first of all, I think the anger towards my father is gone. It's completely gone. And I really do understand, you know, I think I understand more the trauma that he faced and why he kept his secrets. And then going back to the ancestors and sort of the having roots, I think that's given me a whole sense of self-confidence that I'm here and I belong here, and I'm here for some reason, you know, whether it is just to honor my ancestors. It's just given me a whole different sense of confidence, I think. And then I will say, on the religious side, growing up, my mother always told us that we always had to treat every single person, no matter what the color of their skin, their religion, their ethnic origin, their economic status. It doesn't matter. Every person deserves respect and dignity. So we grew up that way. But I think I am much more in tune with anti-Semitic comments, for example, and with what's going on in this world today. I take it much more personally.
And I was going to ask you that. And before I get to that element of sort of present day challenges that we have as a society, talk with me about the point in time when the research was accumulating. And I would think that there's a point where you've got a pretty good grasp I don't know, sort of the degree of confidence you might have had in really the understanding, the comprehension of what you were sort of sitting on from a research perspective, that you then said, I think this is a book. And so that's sort of a two-part thing, Linda, which is that I applaud people that either sort of capture or secure information, or they have an idea and they take that next step, because this could be a story that resides within the walls of the family. But it doesn't now. And I'm wondering if the times that we live in played a role. I'm wondering about sort of the sense of responsibility. And did you go from sort of family member to an advocate for supporting family legacies and traditions? And help me understand that decision-making process to go from an incredible story that you share with somebody at a dinner party, right? and then you move to what I've got here sitting in front of me, which is a book.
So I, you know, when I started out, I never thought I was going to write a book. I really started out because there was so much information. And as I started to research the history, I needed a way to capture it and to make sense of it in my own mind. So that's how I started, is just writing things down and trying to understand the story within the historical context. And then once I had this huge manuscript, basically what it was, but even before then, as during the research, as I would talk to people and especially people in Hungary, but even people here, they kept saying, you need to tell this story. It's important to tell this story. And I know there have been lots of other, especially Holocaust books, but everyone deserves their own story. You know, and I think what happens is when we think about the Holocaust, we think about 6 million people that were murdered, but you can't wrap your head around 6 million people. What does that really mean? So the only way to really have people understand is, I think, to tell an individual story. And to me, I think as I learn their stories, and it's even before the Holocaust, when you look at what they faced during the Red Terror, the White Terror, World War I, and going back to the Hungarian Revolution, and even back to Isaac's story, you know, when he was going to be burned at the stake for simply using the Lord's name in vain. You know, all these stories, these people faced incredible challenges in their life, and, you know, cataclysmic events that completely upended their lives. And these stories are worth telling. And I think what struck me is almost with every single ancestor that I wrote about, their resilience was incredible. And through these incredible challenges, they were still all about service and generosity and compassion. And that was something that was so inspirational to me, and I thought should be shared with the world, I think.
Was that a choice in the design of the book? I found that to be, it aided in the readability of it. I think when people think of heavy topics, it's almost like a gulp. Like, do I have the mental space to be able to digest? But this feels like you're going through almost like case studies, you know, like different individual stories that are all tied together. Was that something that you took into consideration in putting the book together? Because when you're going back to the 17th century, we're talking about an incredible volume of information and narrative.
Yes. Yeah, I thought that each person, each ancestor that I researched, they deserve their own story. And just as you said, they're connected. But yes, that was. And going back to the pictures, what was really important to me is this wasn't fiction. It was they were real people. And I wanted to add those pictures because I wanted to make them come alive for the readers. And I think only when you can really, when you know somebody and when they're alive for you, then you can have compassion for them and a better understanding of what they went through.
Tell me about sense of responsibility or the role responsibility plays in your life now as an author, as a representative of a very large and prominent family that goes back to obviously the research to the 17th century. Just help me understand your relationship to the concept of responsibility as the sort of the beholder of the fragility of family, right? And that it can be taken away at any moment in time. And I do think that's a great sense of responsibility. Not to put that on you, I just mean that as a compliment and an acknowledgement that is, to me, a part of, it's like whether you like it or not, by coalescing this information together in a narrative that is meaningful to you and to the reader, I think it's just sort of, it's riding in the sidecar, right? That sense of responsibility. And I wonder how you think of responsibility now.
Well, we were always brought up with this huge sense of responsibility. It goes back, especially to my parents and really throughout all the ancestors, is this concept of service and making sure that we use, as my mother would say, we use our God-given talents to help the world be a better place. And so there was always this huge sense of responsibility. And in some sense, it could be a burden. And in sometimes it could, and sometimes it was a privilege. It's hard to, you know, they both sort of sat there at the same time. But I think through this book, I felt this strong responsibility to bring their stories out and to be able to honor them and say their names. So in the Jewish tradition, saying their names are really important, and being able to say their names and tell their stories, I felt was my responsibility to them. I didn't, you know, they were, to me, they were almost murdered twice. Some of them, they were murdered, you know, in the Holocaust, or they died, you know, and then by being hidden, they died again. So I feel like this responsibility to bring them out into the light.
You know, I'm wondering how you, anybody that has any connection, sort of agnostic to backgrounds, time frames, but to persecution and war, there are points and times in people's lives where the anger gets redirected and it goes to the oppressor. And I'm wondering if, yes, I understand, like the love and compassion and the purpose of the book, but is there a part of you that, because I would, you may be a better human than I am, Linda, but that, you know, when we think about collateral damage through warfare and persecution of people, you know, some of the things that are part of that are truth, honesty, right? And that books like yours and others are, I think, incredible statements to those that tried to reauthor the world in a way that was unjust. It was abominable in every way, right? And I'm just wondering how do you deal with that? Or is that just me and sort of my own experience that there is just every blue moon you think, you know what? This is a statement that writes the record. And that is incredibly important beyond the names, if you get my point.
Yeah, no, I do. And, you know, just as you said, there's collateral damage, right? When you look at my father experiences this, you know, such trauma that he felt like when he came to this country, he wanted to put all of that behind him and not deal with it anymore and start a new life. And he was going to keep all of that a secret. But here's the dichotomy is that my parents were also all about truth and service, as I said, right? But part of part of what they had to do was hide the truth. Yeah. And so, and I think that was costly to them. It was costly. I think telling this story, was for me a way to bring out that truth. It was important for me to tell the truth about the family.
Linda, if I have you sort of standing in front of an audience of young people who, like sadly so many young people now, that just don't really, I don't know if they have an appreciation for history in the way in which I wish they did, to no fault of their own. I just think the world has changed in certain ways. What do you think the overarching message is? And maybe not to the specifics and the trials and tribulations of war and persecution, but to understanding oneself and the journey to finding yourself. Because regardless of whether we're in the 17th century or in the 21st century, this is part of the human condition, is to understand our purpose, place, and time, and meaning. And part of that is understanding really who we are when we look in the mirror. And I'm just wondering what maybe a message would be for that group of young people that are struggling with different variables in present day, but that there'd be a visceral connection to the human experience of wanting to know who they are.
Yeah, for me, I think my message to them would be, understand yourself, learn your stories, learn about your parents and what they went through, ask questions. Don't, you know, if there's a wall of secrecy like there was with me, and I think many families have that, be persistent and penetrate that wall and try to learn history, study history. Because if you don't know history, you don't even know what questions to ask. And I think the problem is, at least for me, when I learned history, it was all about these big events and dates. And there was nothing personal about it. But when I started on this journey and I really started to dig into history and learn what were the issues going on at that time that people struggled with and had to deal with. And it's amazing how similar those struggles were then to now. They were facing the same kinds of things. And so if we learn history, we can learn so much about what we're facing now and why we're facing things. And to learn about your own history, then you can learn about, okay, why do I react to this way? Why do I, you know, feel this about this certain thing? It's amazing to me, as I learned about certain relatives, how I really felt in my bones that they were a part of my DNA, that I reacted a certain way. And just to give you an example on even a physical level, through this process, I found some ancestors. I found some cousins. And when I first met this cousin who was in California, we didn't even know that each other existed. And the first time we met, he said, "Oh my God, you're just like my mother. You have the same mannerisms. You move your hands the same way. You look the same way." So these things are in our DNA. And if we can learn about our ancestors, I think we can learn about ourselves and just have a much deeper understanding of how we react and respond to things. And I think that knowledge is powerful.
I don't know if it was just me. And yes, I was the one on the other side of the conversation. So I got to see and experience Linda just as a person. She felt like my neighbor next door. She felt like the woman that I strike up a conversation with at a coffee shop while we're standing in line. Incredibly approachable, thoughtful, but also very exacting in understanding the importance of her efforts of her doggedness to get this story out, because it's very, very powerful. And it's something that I was trying to wrap my head around in the interview. You know, the time, the commitment to digging and continuing to dig. Now, yes, she had some very, I think, influential people along her path to help assist in the telling of the Pulitzer saga. But we all need that. I mean, I don't know anybody who does anything alone. And I thought that that was a subset or a sub, you know, sort of story and subheading of this was just the journey itself, not just the story that is, that reveals itself in the book. But wow, a really powerful story. And I don't know about you, but it made me think the happy accidents, and maybe happy is not the right way to put it, but the accidents that open up doors, close doors, reveal openings in time that we didn't know were there. And once they do reveal themselves, it changes really our own makeup and the way in which we think about the world around us. And Linda really challenged me in that way. And I couldn't be happier to be a part of that. It was such a rewarding conversation. I hope it was for you as well. I could not recommend this book more. It's visual. It really goes down an absolute sort of family tree in a powerful manner that brings you right into the world that she was able to discover through all these, you know, the series of happy accidents. Wow. What a wonderful woman. I couldn't recommend The Pulitzer Saga more by Linda Ambrose Brenneman. I encourage you to check it out. And until next time. Thanks for taking the plunge into Headroom, where we uncover the why behind the what and who impacting our lives. Headroom is a production of Rainlight and co-produced by our friends at Old Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Rod Berger, and this is Headroom.